Welcome to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. We're here to bring the best of college recruiting. Every week, we'll bring new guests with knowledge, stories, and tools to take you a step closer on playing at the next level.
Next level.
Let's do this. This is the iSports Recruiting Podcast. And here's your host, Ronnie Romero.
Welcome to today's episode to the iSports Recruiting Podcast. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. And at the same time, if you think that we bring you valuable information for those student athletes and families, please leave us a review at any platform you use, iTunes, Spotify. It will take you 30 seconds. This will help tremendously. In our conversation today, we will be talking with head coach Joanne Bauer out of San Jose State University. Coach Bauer has guided student athletes to the highest level of competition on women's gymnastics. Coach Bauer has been named Pac-12 Coach of the Year, West Region Coach of the Year. We will get to know more about her view of recruiting, style of recruiting, and get to know more about San Jose State University. I'd like to take this moment to invite you to download the app, iSports Recruiting app on Apple Store and Google Play. Only for $24.99, you will get the opportunity to build an online profile that will give you access to an athlete's dashboard, search engine, schools requirements, unlimited highlight videos, and most importantly, unlimited direct emails to college coaches. And now, let's get going with gymnastics coach Joanne Bauer. We're here with Coach Joanne Bauer out of San Jose State University gymnastic women's head coach. Coach, thank you so very much for accepting my invitation. We are extremely pleased to have you on board in order for us to show these little girls and give them a little bit of knowledge and information on how the recruiting process works in gymnastics, which is crucial, which is, I know there is tons of little girls out there having a dream, of course, you know, playing or performing, at the collegiate level and probably the Olympics, which and probably you have some better knowledge than what I do on gymnastics in order for them to perform. But coach, before anything, I always like to start to get to know you a little bit more personally. Okay. So if you allow me to, I'd like to ask you why you in gymnastic and how everything started back in the day with you before you start coaching.
Okay. No, that's fair. I grew up one of five siblings, and my dad was an Army officer that we moved almost every year when I was growing up. My mom would always kind of find the best school system, get a house, and find a local gymnastics club for me to go to. So I did gymnastics my entire life, ended up in Virginia in high school, and went to college doing gymnastics at James Madison University. It was a Division I at the time. Since then, it's become a club sport, unfortunately, there. But I always knew I wanted to coach. I started teaching a lot of the little kids' classes for part of my fees and stuff as early as even junior high and high school. Okay. So I always knew I wanted to coach. Like that's a passion that I just always knew that I loved. Got my degree in health and physical education to be a better teacher. Got my master's in administration and supervision, and then got married very early in college. And he was a college football coach. So followed him a good bit for many times, but had some wonderful opportunities. I was a head coach at Illinois State when I was 25 and then went to Kent State for 4 years. Then I was at University of Michigan as an assistant for 5 years. Then I was the head coach at University of Washington for 10. So I've been at a lot of different places and had some really wonderful opportunities. Most of the time, whenever I left a program, it was because of family, like needing to move on because of my kids, you know, spouse, job, this and stuff. So I got here at San Jose State University 4 years ago. And my mentor at Washington when I was there, Marie Tuitt, she's the athletic director here at the time, and she hired me and we trusted each other. It was like, I knew she loved gymnastics. We already had a good relationship. And it was a program in an area that I was very interested in trying to, there's a lot of good history here at Mm-hmm. San Jose State. And they've had two other coaches here in the past that have done a great job. It was, the program was down a little bit when I took it over, and it was, okay, to me, it was a challenge to be able to build something back and then see how far we could take it. Mm-hmm. So in, during the pandemic, obviously was hard, especially here in California, we were shut down a good bit, but mm-hmm. last year we had our first full season again, and we're able to show what we were really building through our recruiting and coaching. And we jumped up, we won our conference, we ended up taking our team to NCAA regionals. We went from 54th in the country to 34th.
Nice. And
we feel like we have 22 of 24 routines back this mm-hmm. year, because we had a young team last year. So the sky's the limit, and we're having a ball. Beautiful. I have such a great staff. I have such a great team, and the culture's really good. But
that's important. Yeah.
When you reached out about recruiting, one of the reasons I really did answer was I've learned so much over the years, and it changes constantly, right? It changes so much. And I've learned a lot, and I feel like being able to promote, obviously, San Jose State Gymnastics, but also if I can help anybody else, so many people have helped me along the way.
Exactly. It's, because,
you give back.
Definitely. One of the things that, I'm passionate about this, and I really like it. And, I have some few followers, and the podcast is moving, is getting more downloads and downloads every week, because we bring in valuable information. And by talking to you guys, I think this is what they need to listen to, and need to understand a little bit more, because like I mentioned before we start recording, there's so much misinformation up there. There is so much people confused about how the recruiting process work. And this is one of the main reasons what you experience, because everything that you mentioned right now, you've been named, coach Pac-12 of the year in 2007, right? You are a West Region coach of the year. You're a Central Region assistant coach of the year. So the experience that you have, through the years, this is what I want to absorb from you. If you allow me to, I want to take everything that's possible, in order for us to show to these families and little girls and the recruiting process. So tell me a little bit, coach, what should be the first step? If I'm a parent, right? And I have my little girl who is in gymnastic, what is the first recommendation that you can see for them to improve when they're on a youth age right now?
Right. Well, my first thing that I love to tell parents that reach out and say, how do I get my kid a college scholarship? Because I've spent so much money all their life and all these lessons. How can I get them a college scholarship? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the kid's going into 9th or 10th grade and they're thinking about quitting because it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And I always tell the parents, please don't pay those fees in hopes of getting them a college scholarship. Please don't do that. You should save your money and put it in a college account for them. If you're paying those fees because your child is truly enjoying their sport and they're wanting to be involved, then that's great. 1% or maybe a little more. I know in our sport, it's usually about 1% will ever go to college and do gymnastics. Okay.
I think it's 1.2%.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I know if that's the rationale people are using to keep their kid in the sport, I don't think it's a good one. Mm. I tell them here's something. There are going to be hard days. We recruit from club team gymnastics. We don't really recruit from the high schools. Okay. So that's different than a lot of other sports. Mm-hmm. Like there are many states that don't even have high school gymnastics anymore. Okay. Mm-hmm. The ones that do, it's usually a lower level and they just want participation, which is wonderful. I love that. But the higher level kids will be doing club team gymnastics. That's where we recruit from. Okay. So if their child is in a club team program and they're whatever age, are they continuing to move up the levels? Like a level 10 gymnast and an elite gymnast are usually the ones that the Division I programs look for. So let's Go ahead.
And I'm sorry I interrupt you because I mean, do they qualify them to be at that level? Like let's say, you know, in baseball is stats, right? So I batting 300, I batting, you know, 350. Right. So in gymnastics would be by levels, like I am level by one, levels. Two, 10.
And the higher levels they get into, they have to score a certain score at the meets, like the state meet, the regional meet, the national meet at the end of the year. They have to score certain levels to be able to move up to the next one and things like that. But so like many times it does have to do too, though, with the club they're at and their parents of, they could stay back a level and have some more success and get more confidence for a while. They don't have to move up. So that's just when they're allowed to and things like that. But so we look for kids that if a kid, you know, in sixth grade, seventh grade is already 6 feet tall and they're struggling in our sport and they're stuck at a level seven. Lots of times it's probably the writing on the wall. Like if they're enjoying it, let them keep doing it. But it's probably not going to happen for them. If they're moving up through the ranks and they're still in really enjoying it and that type of thing, then let them keep doing it and see how far they can go, you know, type deal. Because the club team gymnastics many times requires a lot of hours and it's not involved in their schools.
Correct.
Many times the kids are doing less schoolwork and doing online stuff sometimes or leaving school early to get to all of their practices. And it's a year-round commitment. It's year-round. Like you don't take time off in gymnastics. Okay. So it's year-round. So many times when they get to the high school level, there are many reasons kids want to quit, even if they're at a high level. You know, they want to get involved in their school. Their body can't take it anymore. It's like they have lots of injuries, stuff like that. They found boys. I mean, there's so many different reasons. And parents need to kind of listen to that sometimes, you know. But the ones that really love it, they'll go through the grind and their parents will try to get them to quit sometimes. And they're like, no, I'm loving it.
I'm loving it.
Those are the ones that keep going. And those are the ones that will usually make it to college. And we don't have a pro system at all. Like when you talk about the Olympics for us, in our sport, they usually go to the Olympics before they come to college. So like last year was the first year in the NCAA that we allowed the Olympic gymnasts to come into college and compete for us and still make money because of the NIL. Okay. Because
the NIL. Yes. Yeah.
So last year was huge for college gymnastics.
Definitely.
Because the Olympic all around champion was at Auburn. There was another Olympian at Utah. There was another Olympian at Oregon State.
UCLA too, right? I think.
Yeah. She was an alternate, I think, but she's going on and doing a lot of things now because she's back from being injured. But I mean, it's just amazing. So our sport's always been really popular.
Yes.
Like after football, they say women's gymnastics is the most viewed on TV and all this other stuff. But I do think now that these Olympians can come compete in college, it has made our sport even more exciting for people.
Excellent.
More exciting.
Because before they were not allowed to, you're kidding me. See, I didn't know that.
Well, I shouldn't say that. They were allowed to do college gymnastics if they took no money and signed no contract.
Exactly.
But most people... like Simone Biles and Elise Ray, who was one of my gymnasts and was my assistant at Washington, Elise wanted to do college gymnastics. Simone signed a contract to go pro and do all the stuff. But they had to decide. They couldn't do both.
So
now they can do both.
That's beautiful. Because it's kind of like, I put it back to baseball. Some of the kids would just jump into from high school to the pro and then they'll continue their education. Yes. But in this case, they were not allowed, which is different because I'm totally sure they would love to go back to school and compete.
Yes.
At the school. Jeez, yes. I didn't know that. That's so, sometimes, so beautiful.
I'll give you an example. There was a girl, she's the head coach at Arkansas right now. After she did real well in the Olympics, she went to UCLA. She couldn't compete for them because she took money. So she was their volunteer coach. And she was involved with the program, had a wonderful experience, but did not get to compete for them.
Oh,
now she's the head coach at Arkansas, Jordan Weber. And I mean, like things like that, I bet she wishes she could have had the opportunity to compete.
No question. No questions. We should call her right now.
I know. I know. And you know what? I think about how we've evolved though. Yeah. Do you know another difference in our sport that's very different from baseball? And a lot of people, I even have recruits that I talk to all the time that if we go to offer them a scholarship or we're talking about offering them a scholarship, and they'll ask me the question, are you talking about a partial or are you talking about a full scholarship? And what people don't understand, many people don't understand, we're a headcount sport, okay? Mm-hmm. Headcount sport like volleyball, basketball, gymnastics, we can't split them. If we're fully funded, which most Division I programs are, that's 12 full scholarships. You can only have 12 bodies on your team that get any money. So I either have to give them everything or nothing.
Everything or nothing.
So the equivalency sports like baseball, track and field, some of those, whatever their scholarship allotment is, if it's 8.3 or 10.2,
split
them up to 30 people. If
exactly.
You want.
9.2, I believe, is in baseball for D1. So then you have to split it with 35 guys. So
you can if you want.
If you want.
But headcount sports, we can only have 12 bodies on scholarship and we have 12 full scholarships.
And that's why you don't have 15 bodies right there. You have 12.
We have 12. So anybody over 12 on your team are walk-ons. And sometimes those walk-ons are competing one or two events for you at such a high level and you want to give them something. And lots of times it comes down to, but I can get an all-arounder for four events and I have to give her a full or I have to. So sometimes you're making those decisions. Okay. Perfect example. You know, you're talking to kids now that don't do an event. You either have to offer them a full or nothing. Well, you can get creative. We're trying to get creative and say, we're going to offer you 3 years because we have to give them fulls, right? For your three events. But I mean, it's like, do you see what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Like,
definitely.
You can get creative that way. But then so you have to keep track.
Are you allowed to offer 2 years only?
We can offer all 4 years. We can offer 1 year. We can offer two. We can offer three. We can offer all four. We can do, we can do what we want that way.
Excellent. So it's not like any type of regulation that, hey, you know, this is what you have to do for 4 years or 3 years now. So you can manage depending on what you need.
Yeah. Depending on what we need.
Now, is it possible for the for the kids? I have a bunch of questions, but I want to go in order right here. That way we don't get confused. Right.
Okay.
So when you say you start recruiting in clubs, and by the percentage of the point that they have, you know, the level 10, 9, 8. When is the best time for you to start? I mean, are you looking kids and freshmen, sophomore? When is the best time for you as a head coach to start looking for these, you know, younger?
Our staff starts tracking kids in ninth grade. Start tracking them. Okay. Now there were a few years when I was at Washington where it wasn't regulated yet and we could offer ninth graders, which we all hated. But if one of your top recruits comes on campus and they have five scholarship offers, you didn't want them to leave campus without one. So you kind of be like, I know you don't even have a high school transcript yet. You just started your freshman year of high school.
Exactly.
This is crazy. Definitely. So now we're not even allowed to offer them until after their junior year in the fall. Okay. We're not allowed to. So we can start calling now juniors June 15th after their junior year of high school. Okay. 15th. We can start having contact with them, meaning we could go to their gym and talk to them. We could have them on our campus, show them around and talk to them after August 1st of their junior year. So what's been happening a lot the last few years, which is different for our sports, is everybody's having these college showcase camps. Okay. Summer. Like I worked three this summer. And normally I wouldn't like to go out and work other people's camps. Like you do your own, right? But this year I went and did three college showcase camps because all of some of the best kids were going to be at this and we got to work with them. Like they got to come to my event and I got to actually coach them.
Definitely.
And it was legal. So I did that and more people are doing that in our sport now. And more people are starting to have fall what they're calling clinics now. And they're trying to get their recruits to come in that you can work with them. That's starting to be a new thing for us too.
Interesting.
But all of this changed during the pandemic for us.
So and you think that have to be with the NIL too as well?
I don't think it has anything to do with that. No. I think it has more to do with during the pandemic, we were shut down dead period for so long and we couldn't go to their clubs. We couldn't have them in. We got behind in recruiting. Then all of a sudden it was like, now we got to do 2 years of recruiting at once. Of our budgets. How do we get out and see all these different kids at different, we can't afford to bring in so many kids all fall and this. So we started doing some of this other stuff to be able to get to know them, work with them and see them. And I think people like it. And I think people are seeing it kind of saves our budget a little bit. And time wise, it kind of helps you too, because you either have to go hit 10 clubs or you can go work one camp and work with kids from like 20 clubs.
do you do your camps on a yearly basis too? Like do you camps at your school? Is
most
possible?
Programs do summer camps. Most do. And I have done them everywhere I've been except for here. When I got here, they had never done them in the summer. So we started doing others. We just got a new gym a couple summers ago with pits and stuff. So now we feel like we can. Then the pandemic hit and we couldn't. This summer, we were going to start them, and I had a turnover in my staff of one coach that was going to run a lot of it. So we decided, let's go out and work the other camps, get everything ready. So next summer, we'll be ready to host all our.
Beautiful.
That's kind of how we chose to do it. But most college gymnastics programs do have summer camps.
Most of them. Well, you have to let me know whenever you're ready to do it, because I'll post it. I'll post it on my Instagram, Twitter, everything. I want to be able to contribute a little bit on that scenario.
Because
you know, one of the things that, you know, that I found amazing for this is, you know, the interaction that we have with college coaches. Some coaches need help. I don't know on your program, but some of the head coaches, they don't even have assistant coach. Right. And they have to do everything by themselves. And that's how I think we can be a little bit helpful. You know, I had the opportunity to go at the international level. I did some presentations on Mexico, Costa Rica, Ecuador, and I have brought some international students to United States. And that's my next question to you. So were you able to recruit international students or not?
I recruit a lot of Canadians. I tell you what, we have had such success in Calgary when I was at Washington, and I became friends with those coaches and those programs. And so one of our new freshmen this year is from Calgary, and it's just kind of like a pipeline, right?
That
you can get things going. I know different college coaches, if they have a friend in the business in Australia, they use their connections they have to help them recruit those international kids. But if you don't have a connection in your sport in that country, it's really hard.
Oh, you're kidding me, really?
It's really hard.
So let's say if he, you know, I went to Mexico or whatever country it is, you know, Venezuela or whatever. If I find a fantastic athlete right there, phenomenal, that she's doing good. Is it impossible for me to present it to you or because it is? Yeah. Okay.
And truthfully, I would just give them my number and email and say, send her your videos and that you're interested, because we get those all the time.
That's one of the things, you know, on our system. We created an app for athletes, extremely affordable. This is not a recruiting service and nothing like that, you know.
Right.
But something that where they can have all the information right there available in order for you guys to see phone number, everything. So I probably need your phone number too as well. That way,
okay.
They can,
okay.
You know,
okay.
They can, because see, like I give you an example. I'm going to Spain Barcelona in November.
Okay.
We have there is a huge company up there. They want us to work together. And they have a facility where they have all kind of athletes. They have track and field, gymnastics, swimming. Mm-hmm. So they want me to do a presentation on recruiting right there. So that's another piece of you know, information that we can provide to the athletes right there, especially, you know, on your sport. You know, I'm gymnastic, sure. But it's phenomenal. I love this because, you know, this is one of the you know, the best way for us to you know, not being from here, from the United States. I love to bring kids. You know, because I didn't have, like I mentioned to you at the
right.
beginning, I didn't have the knowledge of how everything works. And then if you have, you know, an opportunity to get here, it's, you know, outstanding. I mean, to me, it's amazing to see these,
right.
these kids, you know, playing sports or practicing or performing, in your case, right, right. On gymnastic, in order for them to, because let's be honest, who makes it to the Olympics?
I know.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, to be at the Olympics, which is, you know, on your case in the sports, right, it's extremely tough, you know, to get to the Olympics. And those who love gymnastics and can go and compete at the NCAA level is probably, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but probably one of the best option as well. Yeah, what do you think? I mean, I don't know at the international level is all the competitions, but I'm totally sure they are. But you know.
I think most of the best gymnastics clubs in our country mm-hmm. kind of have two paths.
Mm-hmm.
Like the kids that are really looking at going possibly to the Olympics and go world championships and all that, they're mm-hmm. trying to get to the elite level and they're doing a lot of things differently.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those kids, though, during the high school years will drop back to level 10 and say, mm-hmm. I'm going to focus on college. I'm going to get ready for college. Do you see what I mean? And then there's a whole path of kids going up the levels that when they get level 10 and stay level 10 for a few years, so those are like good college gymnasts. So, but they're kind of two separate paths.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. That's fascinating because you probably have that ready, the mentality based on what you're saying right now, that you know you're probably preparing for the Olympics.
Yeah.
Correct. And
a little different preparation. Yeah. And they say that like the mental part, the mental toughness of there's very few athletes that can handle that.
Which is something important now that you mentioned mental. Talk to me a little bit about the preparation on your school, on your system, the style of you know, performing that you expecting for your athletes. Talk to me a little bit about that. What is the hourly, weekly? Because I know, you know, most of them, you can spend even 40 hours practicing on a weekly basis.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the same with you in gymnastics?
Not allowed to. Because in the NCAA, it doesn't matter what sport you are mm-hmm. not, and you have to track it on mm-hmm. a system through your compliance office, you cannot require more than 20 hours a week.
It's
and
20
that's
hours
for everything. That's mm-hmm. for everything. Mm-hmm. So luckily we don't do film. Like a lot of sports like to do film. We have big TVs and cameras up in our gym on every event that we have on that's running on a loop. So after each turn, they can turn to the TV and see that turn and we can talk to them about, but it's immediate feedback. We don't have them come to our offices or have team meetings where they're watching film about what everybody's doing. And so, because that takes a lot of time.
Definitely.
So we're up in the gym more than most sports.
Wow,
but
interesting.
But we do it all in the gym.
So I got my TV right here. If I do a bad move, you come to me and say, hey.
Well, it's kind of like look over. You see how you're releasing early or see how you're going a little bit in this shape. I need you in this shape. Like they can see it. And most people are visual learners too. So having that device really helps, right? But like when I do an intro call with a recruit, perfect example. I did one last night. It takes me sometimes an hour because they have a lot of questions about me, our staff, our program, our team culture, how we run everything. Then I want to ask all about them, right? And you're starting to build a relationship. To me, it's all about relationships. Always, always, always. Beautiful. It's about relationships. Okay. So when you connect with someone, and you're wanting to get to know about them and they're wanting to get to know about you. Like I tell recruits all about me and my staff and what we're looking for. Like we're looking for kids that maybe are late bloomers. We're not one of the top 10 teams in the country right now. We are trying to get there. Looking for kids that maybe don't have the biggest name that everybody knows of, but are very, very talented, love the sport, love to compete, are great teammates, really coachable, right? And possibly a late bloomer. Like they're still really learning. Like they're still moving up. Those are the kids we're looking for.
Beautiful.
Because that's what helps my program. Now, let's take Michigan, for example. When I was an assistant there, they just won the national title 2 years ago. They're not looking for that right now. They're probably looking for the top kids and that's going to come in and right away. You see what I'm saying?
They're ready. They're ready to.
Yes. Definitely. So it depends on where your program is and what your needs are. And where we are right now, that's what we're recruiting. Okay. And we have built a culture here of kids that love the sport, just love it. And it's like, I want to continue to improve and get better. So if you're a good teammate, they all get along good. We have fun in practice. They work hard. They care about each other. We don't have the drama. I call it drama. Okay. We don't have that, but that's what we're trying to minimize. Most programs are trying to minimize the drama. So you better recruit kids that you truly feel like come from good programs that have been treated the right way, that are expected to behave a certain way, respectful and different things and stuff like that. Because we've dropped kids before that have come on a visit and rolled their eyes at their parents or kind of acted like they were too good for stuff and things. And you're kind of like, that's not going to fit into our culture very well, right?
Beautiful.
And stuff. Whereas they might fit into another culture fine and be fine for them.
Most definitely.
But you got to find what you think works for you. And I tell coaches this all the time. I think you should coach within your personality. You should recruit within your personality. Don't try to be somebody you're not.
Definitely. You're going to spend 4 years with those kids.
Exactly. So it's more like, okay, how can we have, you're coming to college. You're going to be 18 years old. I want to treat you like an adult. I want to have an adult relationship with you. Many gymnasts are very worldly. They're very smart. They have good grades. They've traveled all over to compete and they think they're really worldly, right? They're very naive. They've been in their gym all the time. And when it comes to life, I feel like that's an area we can help them grow up and get ready for the world.
Excellent.
And we have a program here called Beyond Sparta that we work on that all the time with all of our athletes because we think that's super important to help them. They're not a piece of meat to use for our gymnastics meets, right? It's like, how can we help you get ready for the world? What can we do to help you?
That's so a beautiful
to me,
culture.
It's a two-way street, but I think respect's a two-way street. Helping each other is a two-way street. I mean,
I always say it takes two to tango. Right.
Yes.
So if we want to dance together, let's, you know.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. We need to move with the same, because, you know, I think that, you know, as a head coach, I believe you mentioned something is crucial. The communication, you know, the communication is a key. And unfortunately, because I seen the kids where I sometimes do presentation and you see the kid looking to the sky, not paying attention, looking at the phone.
Yep.
So you know already who is committed and who is not committed to really go to the next level, right? And it's a tough scenario right now with social media.
It is.
Know, I always mention that because, you know, technology and social media and and sometimes the communication is not up there. You know, they communicate more than nothing with the phone nowadays, right?
It's amazing to me, too, when kids haven't learned to look you in the eye and talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard. It's kind of like what we do is we spend time outside of the gym with all our newbies, whoever comes in new.
Mm-hmm.
We rotate it around our staff, and outside of the gym, you've got to go meet with them, go get a coffee, go sit out on a bench, whatever, talk about life. If they don't think you care about them, they're not going to open up to you. Mm-hmm. They're not. And if you have to get on them about something, I find if they know I care about them, then they're fine with it. They know I'm just trying to help them. Definitely. If they don't know I care about them, they think I'm picking on them, right?
Definitely.
So, and most freshmen come in and they're afraid of you a little bit, and they're afraid to tell you something's bothering them. They're afraid to, it's that communication. They've never really had to do it.
Which happens a lot, you know, right. Like my son, I have 11-year-old boy, yeah. And he's a shy guy, you know, he's very outgoing when you are your friend, you know, but some of the kids are like that. They're very shy. They're very quiet. They're very, you know, and so you have to know how to manage. So how many assistants do you have within
your
team?
We have two. Most Division I programs have a head coach, two assistant full-time coaches, and a volunteer coach.
Okay.
That's what most programs have that are Division I. Okay. Mm. And that's what I have. Then we have a director of ops that helps in the office a bunch and with social media. We have an athletic trainer that does all the medical stuff with them, with the doctors. Then we have a strength and conditioning trainer that helps them with the conditioning pieces. Then we have a nutritionist that they work with. We have an academic advisor that helps them with the classes and different things. So we have, I always say, they have a family. Like we call it our Spartan family that really cares about you.
Excellent.
If you really want to succeed, you have so many people that are here to help you.
Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. Because it's a good sized school, right? I mean, if I'm not mistaken, it's close to the 27,000 kids.
Yeah. I was going to say 35, but maybe that's grad students included or something. I'm not. Yeah.
They probably, I got a total.
Yeah, I consider it kind of in the middle of schools I've been at, like in terms of population. But we're, you know, San Jose, the city, we're not in the city, but we are. You know what I mean? Like I consider our campus kind of like at University of Washington. We were in Seattle, but we weren't in downtown Seattle. We're 4 miles away. Same thing with San Jose. It's like it's considered a city school, but we're not in the downtown city.
You're not in the downtown.
Like, and you feel like your campus community is a community by itself a little bit, but you're really close to go do things, which is nice.
Excellent. So it's a safe environment around the campus.
I would say this. I don't know anywhere in the country right now that I would say is safe to, especially as a female, to go walking around by themselves or at night. And I don't care if you're in a little tiny school in the city. I mean, I don't think anything. Yeah. I think we have a great police force. I think we have a lot of things in place to keep them safe. But I always try to say to people, I think anywhere now, you better park under the lights. You better be in a group. You better, you know, no matter where you're at.
No matter where you are.
Like protect yourself and help each other.
Definitely. I like that culture. Now, coach, if I'm a parent, you know, or an athlete, let's put it this way. I'm an athlete. Okay. I'm you know, one of the athletes is looking to, you know, San Jose. What should I expect from you as a coach?
I think you can expect that I will really show you I care about you, not just tell you I care about you. I'm going to show you by how I treat you every day, how I talk to you, how I check in with you, how I set things up and care about you for classes, for your mental health, for your physical health, how we do things in the gym. I think I'm going to show you, like, I care about you, but I tell them I'm not your mom.
Excellent.
You can't leave your clothes around behind you and expect me to go around behind you and pick up after you. You can't not take care of your business and expect me to constantly remind you about your appointments and about stuff. I said, you have to learn to take care of your business. Now, many of them come from families that's what their moms or dads did for them. Mm. And so we have to teach them. And I usually have to have that conversation with the freshman class early on. Every year, kind of like, okay, mom and dad,
a reminder.
And I'm not your mom. And I'm not calling your mom and dad if I have a problem with you. I'm going to call you and we're going to talk about it.
Excellent.
That type of thing.
That's a great communication, open-minded communication, in order for a little bit of respect, you know, between both, but you know that you know, you're not a babysitter.
No, and I don't want them to think that I'm, and I don't really want them to think that I have to know all their personal business either. I don't. Definitely. Now, sometimes I just care about them a lot and I get real close to them. So I'll kind of tease them about something, but I'm kind of like, it's really your personal business. So you don't have to tell me. I always say, if you have really good assistants and trainers and stuff too, lots of times those are the people they go to. And you've got to trust them that they've got your back and that everything's fine.
they feel more comfortable on that. Yes.
I was an assistant coach, that was my role more with them.
Interesting.
As a head coach, even if my personality didn't change, because my role changed, a lot of times they're more fearful of me to come talk to me about a problem that they'll talk to somebody else about. Excellent. Which is fine, as long as I can trust those people to always have my back. And I do implicitly. So that's what works out well too.
Excellent. Great answers, coach. And now, when it comes to videos, because you say send the videos, send me connections.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit, or what will be the evaluation that you do on the videos? How long the video should be every time, and how often should I send a video to you in order for you to follow up with my, you know, my tournaments or my showcases or anything like that?
Usually I will ask people to tell us if you're on Instagram and if you update regular videos as you are improving, like once every 2 weeks to 4 weeks, are you putting new content on Instagram? If you let us know that, we will follow you and we will start watching that. Okay. Now, if they don't, and they have like a YouTube channel that they post stuff on once in a while, I'll say, well, anytime you post it, you got to let us know, because we're not on that all the time and we're not searching for you. Excellent. So you have to remind us. If they say, how often do you want it and what do you want to see? I'll say, you know, once a month is probably enough your junior year, to be honest with you. Once we get into the thick of things, though, if you're in the process of coming on visits and we're trying to figure out scholarships and stuff, the more they can stay in the forefront with us by sending us stuff, and like whether it's a text, an email, whatever, like, hey, coach, look what I did today at practice. This. It's like they don't let you forget them. Which is kind of nice sometimes.
Excellent.
If a kid is not to the level that we need to see to keep recruiting them, we always respond. I always tell my assistant coaches, please respond. Because staffs won't respond to those kids and the kids will stop sending us. I think that's rude. We have a form letter that we email back saying, thank you for your interest. You're not quite at the level of what we're looking for, but we wish you good luck. Excellent. But that way they know they don't have to keep sending it.
Exactly. You know already that, hey, you know what? This is not what she's doing. I'm not her type or their type.
And I would tell kids that are reaching out to college coaches, if you're never hearing back, That's a sign. They just might not tell you. You're not on their list. Now, I think they should tell you you're not on my list. But if you're not hearing back, that's telling you something.
So if I'm a freshman and a sophomore.
Yes.
Can I still send you information?
Yes.
I know you're not going to get in contact with me.
Well, you know what we do for those kids? If we get something from somebody that's before their junior year, okay. And I get about 25 to 30 emails a day that I don't look at and I forward to both my assistants. Okay. Mm-hmm. Their responsibility is to look at each one and see what response are you going to give. You're either going to respond to, you're not quite at the level that we're looking at, but if you get there, contact us back. Or if they're really good, but it's too young for us to call them, we say, hey, go ahead and fill out our questionnaire. We're not allowed to contact you until after your junior year, June 15th, but we'll start watching you. They get that email from us.
Excellent.
Okay. So it's kind of like that's, we're allowed to respond, thank you, and we're allowed to respond with the questionnaire. We're allowed to do that, but we're not allowed to try to recruit them until, and we can't call them or contact them or anything until.
And should they send you after, let's say that you send that letter and say, okay, you know, you can put the information right here and everything. And after you send that email, can they still send information to you or you prefer not to, or you specify that in the email?
They can. It's just we've already told them we're not allowed really to contact them. And we can't keep responding to them once we've sent them the email that you're too young. Here's the questionnaire. We'll put you on the list. You can't keep responding to them. Now, they can keep sending us stuff if they want, but we can't keep responding.
You're not going to respond. You're not going to respond.
Yeah, it's against the rules.
Because in case, you know, I look at it this way. Like, okay, let's say, you know, I'm a freshman and in 6 months, I want to show you how good I did with my new video, and 6 other months, you know, I send you another video. That's what I'm thinking as parents and maybe as students. But that's not probably what you are looking for yet.
Yeah.
You want more of that when they're hit this junior year.
Yeah. Yes and no, because their freshman year, if they're really talented and they're interested, we want to know and get them on our list and get them on our radar. Okay. But that's when they've got to start going to those college showcases and the camps and any schools they think they might be interested in. If they ever are in that area, like for a Christmas vacation or summer or family break stuff, get in touch with it. Say, hey, can I get on your campus? Now, if it is before the time we're allowed to contact them, they if we have open practices, they're allowed to come in and watch, but we can't talk to them. Okay. If they want to do a campus tour and we can't contact them yet, they can get in touch with campus and do a tour through campus, right? If they're after the age that we can contact them after their junior year, August 1st, and they want to come on campus and see things, then they can contact us if they're going to be in the area and we'll set something up.
Definitely.
But most of us kind of have a list by then. Pared, not all the way pared down, but pretty pared down. So if they wait until their junior year, sometimes it's kind of like, oh, where'd they come from? Ideal, you know?
Excellent. Excellent. That's beautiful information. Now, on this case, when the athlete, you know, after the junior year, talk to me about official visas and non-official visas. You offer official visas, and how many, if you know, like how many could you offer on a yearly basis?
Every budget is different. Our budget is not as good as the Pac-12, Big Ten, and SEC. Okay. So we have to use our dollars wisely. I still do a lot of official visits. I do a lot of unofficial visits. They're allowed 5 official visits. And they need, I even tell the local girls, if I were you and you have a lot of interest, I would come to us on an unofficial and just pay for the meal and your parking if you want.
Exactly.
You can still do the whole itinerary, go to the football game with the comp tickets, you know, hang out with our team, stay with our team, watch practice, do all this stuff. You can still do the whole itinerary, but we can't pay for anything, but it's not going to cost you much. So the unofficials, sometimes the local kids are choosing to do unofficials, right? Then the ones that you're flying in, they're the official ones, or that's where I said coaches are starting to do fall clinics now. And what I noticed last fall and this fall, schools are getting smarter. They're saying, oh, I'm going to do a fall clinic on these 3 Saturdays. Well, what they're doing is they're getting their top recruits to pay to come work with them. And then after that camp's done, they can do an unofficial or official visit, but they're already there.
Definitely.
So it saves their school budget and they get to work with the kid.
Excellent.
So that's happening more and more. Every year's different, depending on how many scholarships we have available and what we're looking for. And it really depends on, are we recruiting more local kids in California or more like out of the country, out of the state? Like, we have three weekends. We have one set up for end of September, one middle of October, and one beginning of November that we are offering a lot of our top kids. Can you come in? Now, they're choosing sometimes if they want it to be official or unofficial, depending on stuff like that. Sometimes we're saying you can come in, but we're not going to pay for anything. It's going to be an like if we pay even for parking, that's considered an official.
If you pay one meal.
To me, if a kid's coming in just for Saturday and they're going to watch practice, weights, hang out with the team, do a team tailgate, go to the football game and go home, I would say do an unofficial that
day.
It doesn't cost you hardly anything. Like, because that saves their five visits, right? Now, what we're finding too, though, is like we're working on our class of 2024 right now. We're getting ready to sign our class of 2023 in November.
Now,
that class, pretty much all the good kids are gone and they're all committed. Some of us have one maybe that's floating, or a kid that ended up getting hurt, or somebody quit, or somebody made a decision different, or something like that, that you might still be recruiting a couple 23s this fall, but it's really the class of 24s. So this is their junior year. They're using the fall trying to figure out what offers are available, who's interested. Do you see what's happening?
Definitely.
So by the time they, like we start our season in January, they start their season in January. A lot of those kids want it done. Like, it's still just a verbal contract until the their senior year in November when we do signing, right? But in our sport, that's pretty common.
Excellent. Because, you know, every parents probably, you know, that I talk to, they sometimes they have, they're very confused about those official and unofficial visits. And they don't understand, you know, sometimes how the official works. Now, when you do official visits, can you guide me through a little bit on how is the official visit works when I go to,
and you know, I will say this, I will say this, we're working on the itinerary for two weekends from now, our first official visit weekend, that we have some unofficials coming in, some officials, and we're working on it right now. I got in touch with each one of those kids that we were flying in and I said, how about this flight? I found this flight for you. Does this work for you? Who's coming with you? Is someone coming with you? If they don't want to come with you, that's okay. We'll pick you up from the airport. We'll take care of you. We want you to stay with the team anyways. That's fine. If one or both parents want to come with you, they have to pay for their own flight. We're not going to pay for that. I can
pay only for the athletes.
I'll pay for the athlete. Now, and different schools do different things.
This is San Jose.
Yeah. So I tell them, though, if you bring parents in with you, I'll pay for a hotel for them. It's right by the airport. It's 5 miles from our campus. If they want to get a rental car to come and go during the weekend on their own, that's on them. If they want to join us for everything on the itinerary, we will pick you guys up, drop them at the airport, drop you with the girls, and they can kind of, we can make sure they get to everything, and we can pay for all of everybody's meals. Okay. Plus they get three complimentary tickets to any event. We usually try to do it around a football game to get the whole college experience.
The whole college, definitely.
So during that visit, we have set up, like, we want you to watch a practice. We want you to watch a weight training. We want you to meet with our academic advisor to get the academic plan. Okay. Mm-hmm. And we want to do a campus tour. We want you to have time that you spend with our team that no coaches or staff is around and your parents aren't around. Mm-hmm. We want to have time that we get to spend with you a little bit to get to know you better. We do a thing where we call it, our uniform is a long sleeve leotard, okay, in school colors and stuff. Well, we started doing this a few years ago where when they come in for their visits, we do a photo shoot, okay? So they put on our team Leos and they do photo shoots and they have all this fun and stuff. Now, we use those pictures after we sign them the following year to an NLI. We've got pictures of them in that. We're not allowed until they sign the NLI and we get that back. Until we're not even allowed to post that they're coming, right? Mm-hmm. Now, NCAA did say, though, you can give those pictures to them. So when they leave campus, they're posting them all over their social media, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, look, I was at San Jose. I'm in there, Leo. I'm having fun. I'm this and this and this. And you see a lot of that in different sports right now, right? Where they're doing the photo shoot.
Yes.
And they love that. Like, that's a lot of fun.
Definitely.
You know? So that's kind of how we work our official visits.
Beautiful. That's very important. That way people understand what an official visit is in order for them to have a better experience, because it's crucial for them to know. Now,
do you know something else I liked? I really like people. I think people need to understand too. Many people think it's important that they come in to watch one of our competitions, like one of our home gymnastics meets. I don't think that's a good idea. Okay. And here's why I say that. Their season and our season are at the same time. It's very difficult to plan, okay? They can watch our competitions on TV, and they can see how our team does. They can see the team energy, the culture, and all that. They can see it all on TV, okay? We have 200 days a year of practice, and we have 12 meets, okay? I think they should want to come in and see what a practice looks like. And how it's run. And do you like the way the coaches set it up? Do you like the way they're coaching? Do you think that's good for you? I just think that's so important. So when kids say to me, well, what if I come in for one of your home meets for my visit? And I'm kind of like, well, I don't think that's the best for them, but I also don't think it's the best for us, because we need to have our team focused on the meet and not on recruits.
Definitely. See, that's because you have an MTV right there. So take advantage of that, right?
Right.
Take advantage of you know, how you guys can, you know, perform on TV. Now, how your schedule looks like, and, you know, before we go, do you feel confidence, you know, for the next upcoming year? Because you're starting, if you're not mistaken, in January the 9th, right, against University of Denver. So how
you're looking at last year's.
Oh no,
you're looking at last year's.
This is 2022.
And here's what's funny, and I'm glad you brought this up. No one has posted their 23 schedule yet, because we're all just getting our basketball schedules, and most of us share arenas with basketball. So I'm getting my 23 schedule approved tomorrow. Then I can put it out. Okay. So I can't even give it to you today. I can tell you that our first meet this year is going to be in Vegas. It's going to be in Vegas, and it's going to be a huge, big, there's going to be four big, huge meets going on, two Friday, two Saturday. All the top teams in the country are going to be there, and we just got invited to it. And we're going. And that's going to be the first weekend in January. And we are so excited to be invited to this, right? So we're definitely doing that. So last year we did start at Denver, and we almost upset them, and they're a top 10 team in the country. And then our team started trending all over the country that, San Jose State is a team to look at. I've always told teams, when we're trying to get to be one of those teams, the only way we can make noise, and it's a subjective sport with scoring and stuff, is we have to be ready out of the gate at the very beginning of the season and show people, hey, look at us.
We're here.
And that's kind of what we did last year. And that's what we want to do this year, too.
Beautiful, beautiful. Hey, send me one of those tickets. I want to go. I'm close by Vegas. So.
Oh, that'd be great. That would be great.
I would love to. I would love to. That's one of the things that, you know, every time that I talk to a coach or do a podcast, they always say, Ronnie, come to the campus. You know, we show you around. We can do anything, you know, with you that way. I even got invited to do fencing. You know, the coach in New Jersey, he's like, hey, come here. I put you to sweat, man.
I bet.
Gymnastic. I'm sorry. I'm not that level.
Yeah.
Coach, it's been a pleasure. You know,
this
I know we've
been wonderful.
It's been more than an hour, a little bit more, but it's been a pleasure, you know, talking to you, getting to know you personally and get this information. I mean, it was a quick hour, to be honest with you.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe it has. I got to get up to practice here soon. But thank you so much for having me. And seriously, if you're ever here on our campus, I'd love to meet you.